Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic. Each weekday, we bring you a meditation inspired by the ancient Stoics, something to help you live up to those four Stoic virtues of courage, justice, temperance, and wisdom. And then here on the weekend, we take a deeper dive into those same topics. We interview Stoic philosophers. We explore at length how these Stoic ideas can be applied to our actual lives and the challenging issues of our time. Here on the weekend, when you have a little bit more space, when things have slowed down, be sure to take some time to think, to go for a walk, to sit with your journal, and most importantly, to prepare for what the week ahead may bring. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts, discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic podcast. I don't know about you, but sometimes it hits you, not how old you are, but just how easy you could sort of get lost in your conception of time. There's this great story of Seneca where he's visiting one of his properties and the trees are getting old and the house is falling apart and there's this old guy working on them. And then it hits Seneca. He planted those trees himself, you know, and now they were old and dying. And he just realizes how old he is in this moment. Every once in a while, I'll have a moment. I'll talk to someone and I'll have to look them up or whatever. I'll see when they were born. And it just gives you, you're just like, oh man, today's guest was born in 1999. So this is far and away the youngest guest on the Daily Stoic podcast, if I'm not forgetting anyone. It just hit me. I mean, I know I'm only in my early to mid 30s, whatever you want to call it, but just seeing 1999 and remembering very distinctly the year 1999 and how old I was in that year. And I remember, I just have memories of you know, December 1999, January 2000, you know, and you're having to write the year 2000, you know, on your school papers or whatever for the, and what a huge transition that was. Cause before you'd be like 96 and then it'd become 97, then 97 become 98, but it's like, wow, the millennium. And pretty incredible that I am talking to someone who's 1999 and that person is a second year veteran of the NFL. There's something about sports too, you know, I saw a meme about this where it was like, and now comes the grizzled old veteran who's, you know, your age, or as you get older, like half your age, and you watch, you realize, as the Stoics say, the constant rhythm of time, how time is passing us by. We're always moving forward. We're getting older every minute, every day, as Seneca says, dying every day. I don't know. That was just some interesting thoughts I had as I was prepping for this intro. My guest today, I actually met when Adam Lefkoe, the sports announcer and commentator, sent me a screenshot of the fact that today's guest had been reading Stillness is the Key. Jeff Okuda is a cornerback for the Detroit Lions in the NFL. He played at Ohio State. He was a unanimous All-American, a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. and he was selected third overall in the 2020 NFL draft by the Lions. He is, you know, one of the most promising cornerbacks in the NFL, largely considered the best cornerback prospect in the game when he was drafted. His rookie year was obviously thrown off kilter by COVID. He soldiered through. He missed the first game of the season, actually, with a hamstring injury. That's actually one of the things we talk about in today's episode. How do you manage insane expectations for you? How do you manage criticism and doubt? And then also, how do you recover from injury? How do you figure out how to train? How do you worry about overtraining and burnout? I really, really enjoyed this interview. Jeff and I had an awesome conversation. I got really into it. And it was just really encouraging and exciting to talk to someone with such a great head on their shoulders, someone who is clearly committed to not just being the best at one element of their profession, but really optimizing themselves completely. Epictetus, quoting Socrates, says, you know, some people delight in improving their fortunes or their farms. He says, me, I delight in my own improvement day to day. I think that captures Jeff well. And so I was not just excited to talk to him, but I came away feeling very inspired. This is going to sound a bit condescending, but you know, you talk to a young kid, I'm sure people have felt this talking to me, or maybe the opposite of talking to me. But you talk to a young person, you're like, these kids are all right. They're going to be fine. It gets you excited about what Gen Z is going to be able to do. And I think Jeff is a person who has not just a ton of potential, but as you'll see in today's episode, a ton of stuff to teach us. I think you're really going to like this. We got into a ton of really great books that I think you should read. I'm following up with this list with him as well. A bunch of the titles I carry at the Painted Porch, so you can check the show notes, the episode description on iTunes or Spotify or whatever, and get some of the books we recommend, like The Inner Game of Tennis and The Alchemist. You can get Mastery, of course, by Robert Greene, and a bunch of other awesome books. You can get those in the description at my store, The Painted Porch, or of course on Amazon. We'll have links to both, but Jeff is a big reader, and so we nerded out about some books, so I think you'll like that. I would tell you to follow him on social media, but he deleted his Instagram, so he does have a Twitter. You can follow him at Jeff Okuda on Twitter. That's Jeff Okudah. You can also watch him on TV this season. Follow along. I think it's going to be his breakout year. And I think he's a kid to watch. So here's my Daily Stoic interview with the one and only Jeffrey Okuda. Are you in Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Frisco, Texas right now.
Are you from here? How did you end up in Texas again?
Yeah, I'm actually... I was born in New Jersey, but I was moved to Texas when I was 11. So I've been living in Texas ever since then, Grand Prairie, Texas.
Nice. I'm curious, how does it work in the NFL, like sort of season versus off season? I know this is technically like only your second off season or whatever, kind of your first off season, but like, how does it work? Like, you're going back and forth for OTAs. Is it different because of COVID? How does it work as the season starts to ramp up?
Pretty much. I mean, the season concludes, whatever day or less game may be. You pretty much do an exit physical, and it's like you go off and you do your own thing. Like, everyone kind of has like an individualized program. And then you report back for OTAs. You know, some guys do the voluntary OTAs. That's optional. And there's like a 3-day mandatory minicamp, which everyone has to be present for. And then you go off and do your own thing again for like 4 more weeks, and you come back for training camp, and the ball gets rolling.
So that's sort of just starting to ramp up now, right? Like, that you're starting to actually have to think about the season starting here in like 2 months, basically.
Well, honestly, I've been thinking about the season probably since January. I think if you're thinking about the season starting right now, and it's probably a little bit too late.
Okay. Like the off season is weird for me. So like, as a writer, I'm kind of always doing it. Like, I guess some writers are sort of like, I'm working on a book, I'm not working on a book.
I kind of try to stay like at my fighting weight all the time, like try to sort of never think of an off season.
Yeah.
But what I do isn't physically draining the way that what you do is. So like, how do you balance, like, yeah, you come off a season in January, you'd probably work out every day if you could. Like, how do you, I guess what I'm asking is like, how do you think about pacing yourself, your drive, your ambition to get better, but then also not burning out or injuring yourself?
See, that's actually the balance that I'm, you know, kind of figuring out right now, because, you know, in high school, middle school, college, it's kind of like you kind of just grind, because obviously you're trying to get to the end game of getting to the NFL. But then once you get to the NFL, if you just stay in that grind mode consistently, you really just burn yourself out, because the NFL season is really so long. It's strenuous on the mind as well as the body. So I think you have to be able to sit down and be able to identify like points where, okay, let me kind of take my foot off the gas right now. Let me take a vacation here. Let me pull back on a workout here. Because, I mean, it's kind of like you got to play the long game with it. Because if you can't play the long game, I mean, it's a long season. 17 weeks of just going at it with the best of the best. You have to be able to find that, you know, that happy place.
Yeah, it is a tension, right? Because you hear about, I don't know, like, let's look at the NBA. You hear stories about, like, Kobe Bryant working out every day of the offseason, coming in better shape than he left. He's shot thousands of free throws and three-pointers or whatever. And then you also look at, like, this NBA season, where basically by the time they got to the finals, because of the shortened and sort of the also longer season last year, like, almost nobody who was in, like none of the all-stars were still standing by the end of the season, just, yeah, like injury after injury after injury. And they're thinking it's a result of, like, the compressed season and not enough recovery time. So how do you balance, like you want to get better, you don't want to have downtime, but then also knowing that, like, you need to have downtime?
I think you find ways to get better that aren't necessarily physical, whether that may be reading, whether that may be, you know, talking to close family members, like getting out things that you may have been internalizing throughout the year. That's always beneficial. I mean, honestly, I've probably done less physical work this offseason, but I feel like I've been in a better physical shape than I was last offseason. So it's a pretty kind of, you know, interesting thing to me right now, because I'm trying to kind of grasp the concept of doing less, but like achieving more.
No, I love that. There's actually this great passage in Meditations. Marcus Aurelius says, you have to ask yourself at every moment, is this essential? He says, because most of what we do is not essential. And then he says, when you eliminate the inessential, you have the benefit, you get the double benefit of doing the essential things better. And I've got to imagine that given the conditioning that you've been on for, you know, most of your life at this point, you're probably not trying to cut weight or add weight or add physical skill. You're probably spending time watching film or spending time, you know, thinking or planning or as you said, like dealing with something in your personal life that may give you more of an edge than like an extra day in the weight room at this point.
Exactly. I think once you reach the NFL, for the most part, guys are pretty much almost at their physical peak. I mean, you're not going to go from running a 4.5 to a 4.3 from the age of 22 to 24. So I think it's more so, yeah, about the maintain game. Are you able to maintain it and not, you know, reduce your level of athleticism? Just find different ways to maintain it. Maybe like you might be able to increase it a little bit, but the gains are going to definitely reduce in that pro level as opposed to the gains that you'll see on the collegiate level.
Yeah. And it's not like baseball or basketball where you entered the league having spent a considerable amount of time in college and at a really good college program. So you didn't come in as like basically a high school senior. You are roughly what you're going to be physically, as opposed to like, yeah, coming into the NBA and needing to add 30 pounds of muscle.
Exactly. Exactly.
It is interesting too. Yeah. Like Tom Brady sort of leading the charge as far as football goes of like, actually maybe less time in the gym period is the key. And it's more about pliability and sustainability and not putting needle. If the season is 17 weeks of grinding and then you're grinding on top of that, that's a good way to grind yourself into dust, basically.
Yeah, and I pretty much had to learn that the hard way. You know, last offseason was really weird with the whole pandemic because I really didn't have a feel of how things were supposed to work out. So it kind of became almost a freestyle in a way. It just kind of, how do I prepare for the NFL? Like, and you kind of, I mean, for me, I felt like I over-prepared. You know, I was trying to work out every single day. I was trying to do all this running and, you know, my body was going through it. When it came down to the season, I was already burnt out. I mean, I ended up having to get surgery on both of my groins. So I kind of had to learn to, you know, you got to pace yourself and you want to peak at the right time. I mean, if you peak in February, I don't think that it's considered a win. I think peaking right at the time of going to training camp or even right before the season starts, that's what we can consider a win.
Yeah, I was just reading this book about Floyd Patterson, who was the heavyweight champion of the world sort of right before Muhammad Ali. And he was telling the story about early in his career, he had this older brother. They were both boxers, but, you know, so he had more potential than the brother. But, you know, you always look up to your older brother. And it was like the day of a fight and he had done his conditioning and his brother showed up to the gym and was like, hey, I'm going to go run 5 miles. You should come with me. And he said, no, I already have worked out. And his brother sort of, you know, started busting his balls about it. And so he went and he did another, you know, round of conditioning. And by the time he's in the ring later that night, he feels it like in the third or fourth round. He's just totally gassed. And that struck me as an interesting sort of encapsulation of what we're talking about, because when you are self-disciplined and when you're competitive and driven, it's almost harder to say, no, I'm not going to do it. I've already worked out, or to say, no, I need to recover here. I need to rest, than it is to go run 5 miles or go. Like, it's easier to go to the gym than to stay home and be with yourself and be a little bit uncomfortable, don't you think?
No, exactly. And I think the big thing, you know, is just not really comparing your journey to the next man's journey. So just seeing, you know, like you said, being a competitive person, you might see one of your teammates or maybe one of the guys you're going to go against doing a crazy workout. And then you kind of feel like, man, I need to go outside and do a crazy workout too. But it's not really about that. You know, it's about, you know, focus on your own journey, stay in your own lane, and focus on your own gains.
Yeah, social media plays a part in that too, right? Because every time, like, sort of the workouts start, all these guys start posting these crazy beach workouts and like everything on Instagram. And just like normal people sort of see what their friends are doing on social media, and it sort of warps and messes with their mind. I got to imagine seeing somebody doing something crazy, you feel like you have to do something, but their trainer could be a total quack. Like, you have no idea.
Yeah. Honestly, this off season, I've tried to, you know, keep my social media use to like a minimum, you know, just getting off of that platform and really just focusing on having a present mind. You know, not really worrying about what the next man is doing, really just focusing on myself. And I've just been able to see, you know, such a substantial growth, you know, in everything that I've been doing so far.
It's also, I try to remind myself, like, people are on different journeys, right? Like, this is something I remember learning early as a runner, which is like, you know, let's say you go to some track and somebody's there when you get there and then you start running and now, like, and then somebody else comes after you're going. All these people are at different phases of their workout, but then you get like next to each other and suddenly you're like, well, why is this person passing me? Or do I need to go faster? Right? We're all running our own races, essentially, right? And so, like, your race as a second-year player is different than the race of a 10-year veteran versus, you know, somebody who hates the game and is just coasting and, you know, collecting their paycheck versus, I don't know, some of these guys that are, like, so driven and motivated that the game is the only thing that matters to them, right? And you kind of have to figure out, like, one, what am I trying to accomplish? Two, what makes me happy? You know, three, what's best for my body? And four, like, what does success look like to me? Does success look like, you know, having a long career? Is it a short career? Is it Super Bowl or bust? Is it, you know, would you consider yourself a success if you play 12 years, but you can barely walk afterwards? You know, you got to figure out what success looks like to you.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, or one of the big things, you know, it's multiple ways to get to the final destination. I think everyone thinks that it's just, you know, one way to get to that final goal, which whatever your final goal may be. But I think you've seen countless stories of this guy might go to a junior college and then go to a Division I school, then go to the NFL, where this guy might go from a Division I straight to the NFL, or this guy might start Division I, stop playing football for a couple of years and still end up in the NFL. I mean, there's multiple ways to get to that final destination. So I think fixating your mind on just it being one clear-cut way to do it, that's the wrong way to approach it, man.
Yeah, and especially when so much of it is outside your control. I mean, your first season's disrupted by a once in 100 years pandemic, but also, like, you know, how many guys, you know, pull something the first day of training camp, or, you know, somebody pulls something, you know, right before the Super Bowl, right? There's so much that's not in your control. You have to kind of, so the Stoics have this image that, like, that we're like dogs tied to a cart, right? So like the cart's just trucking along and we're trotting behind it. We can try to pull the cart, but we don't actually really control where it's going. So we're just going to, you know, strangle ourselves. Also, we can resist, you know, you could just lay down and it'll drag you. The idea is you kind of just cheerfully walk alongside as best you can. And I try to remind myself that, like, we're not really in control of how it's happening, how fast it's happening, how long it's going to last. You just got to go along for the ride.
No, definitely. I think something that my coach told me this offseason at the very start of it is a Bruce Lee quote where he was just like, be water, you know, just to be able to adapt to different situations and not, you know, as water is able to adapt to really anything you put it in. He said, just kind of have that mindset because, like you said, there's a lot of external things that are just out of your control. So whenever something comes up to you, to be able to adapt to it. You know, don't have your mind set on things should be a certain way, because if that's your mindset, when things don't go the way that you plan for them to go, then it kind of puts you in a state of, you know, dysfunction. So I think having that mindset of, okay, this happened, okay, I'm going to adapt to this on the fly, that kind of helps you, you know, be ready to embrace anything that comes your way.
Yeah, although the great Bill Walsh said that individuals like water will always seek lower ground, right? So the problem with water too is water just goes wherever, you know, water goes to the weakest point or to the lowest point. So it's a tension. But I do love that quote, because the idea is, the other thing about water is not only is it adaptable, but, you know, you drip water on a stone long enough, you know, steadily enough, it'll wear through anything. Yep. So there's also, you know, I think when people hear this idea of sort of resigning or going with the flow, that feels weak. And to some degree it is, right? The Stoics are kind of resigned to some things, but it's also incredibly strong because, yes, you're not plowing through it with sheer force, but steadily and consistently over time, you actually are, you know, sort of drilling down where you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, if I sat down on January 1st, and planned out how my year was going to go, I think I would be looking at myself on December 31st, like, wow, my year went nothing like I planned. You know, it was things that I couldn't have accounted for in that plan that came up along the way. So I think just having that mindset of, you know, just taking things as they are, embracing whatever comes. I mean, that's been big. I mean, that mindset, I think we've had a lot of discussions earlier on is when I was kind of getting to know the Stoic beliefs and whatnot. And just learning all that stuff, that was something that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, I remember it being sort of around your age, and like patience was like my huge weakness, right? Because like you have so little experience, like you've only, like, what's the longest thing you've ever done, right? Like college, right? Like, you know, we don't do things for very long early in our life, you know, because we haven't been alive that long. But as you get older now, like, I've done stuff for 10 years, like, or, you know, I've known this person for 15 years, right? You just have like a longer time span. And I remember thinking at the beginning of the pandemic, some of these young athletes where they're like, no, you're going to, like, the season's delayed by 4 months. And they're like, 4 months, that's 3% of my life, you know? but I just remember being like so intense about everything and not being able to be patient. And in retrospect, like it all worked itself out. I just wasn't used to like things taking longer than I wanted them to take. And that made me really unhappy. And it probably also made me very unpleasant to be around.
No, definitely. I think that, like you said, I mean, I know people always say hindsight is 20/20. A lot of the issues that, you know, might seem really big in the moment, when you look back on it months from now, just they seem a little bit more minuscule, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I know that totally. I think stillness is the key. The one chapter you're talking about, the whole JFK thing, you know, when he was deliberating on what he was going to do with the whole Cuban crisis, and then he kind of just took a step back and, you know, let the situation unfold. And then, you know, that deliberation right there would actually let him to have, you know, a clearer mindset. You know, so the things that seem like, okay, in the moment, it's a big deal, they ended up not even being that big of a deal. I mean, they still were a big deal, but he was able to see it with a clearer mind, you know.
And that must be extra hard for you, because like for most of your actual profession, like when you're on the field, like the moments that you're dealing with are like 3 seconds, yeah. You know, like you're having to react in like instant. It's all about your snap reflexes. Like, you know, how quick can you do this? And then but also you have to step back and think about it in the context of a season and in the course of a career. And then in also the course of a life as a human being.
Yeah. And another thing I know, that just the whole zooming out, you know, just looking at things with a zoomed out perspective, you know, that kind of just gives you more insight on, you know, how minuscule things actually truly are.
Got a quick message from one of our sponsors here, and then we'll get right back to the show. Stay tuned. I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorn sponsored today's episode. Thorn takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorn, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorn. Go to thorn.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorn.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80. Yeah, I think about it as it's like weirdly both are valuable. So it's like sometimes you have to zoom way in. Like, what am I going to do in the next 5 seconds? That's all I need. Like I was working out this morning. It's like I only have 3 reps left. Is this extremely hard? But like I can do one rep, then I can do one more rep, and then I can do one more, and then this is over, right? And then other times you're in like the thick of something and you have to zoom way, way out and think about it like, am I going to care about this in a year? Or 10 years or 100 years. And so it's like, sometimes you got to look at it way up close and sometimes you got to take the 10,000 foot view.
No, definitely. I agree with that 100%.
So you mentioned like that sometimes training for you is not physical, it's mental. We got connected because I think you'd posted about Stillness is the Key, but you do seem to have a very active reading habit. So walk me through where that started with you and the sort of journey you're on, you know, educationally, as an athlete and a human being.
Definitely. So growing up, I think I always loved reading. Like in elementary school, they used to have things in the summer where you read these books. Really, I think I liked reading because when you'd read these books in elementary school, you go to the library and then they'd give you like this sticker. And with this sticker, you can take it to Pizza Hut. And we took the sticker to Pizza Hut, you get free pizza. And for me, I knew that was the only way that I was going to get this free pizza. So I would always go to the library and I would read countless books. Like I might go to the library, grab 10 books, and I would just knock out 10 books, take it back to the library and get my free pizza. And then that habit, you know, I probably stayed in that from like first grade to fifth grade. And then I don't know, out of nowhere, I stopped reading. Maybe from sixth grade to probably 12th grade, I wasn't an avid reader anymore. So I don't know, maybe with sports and everything, I just stopped reading as much. And so honestly, I mean, you know how that goes. You have this going on, that going on. I just stopped reading as much. And then, so when I got to college, I think it was my sophomore year, one of my teammates was reading a book, Dear Martin, by Nick Stone, I believe. It was talking about a black kid who had gotten murdered. And it rests, basically the book was trying to make sense of, you know, the social injustice that's going on and the unjustified arrest. I mean, this kid in the book was African-American kid that was going to an Ivy League school, but still being, you know, racially profiled and whatnot. And that kind of caught my interest. But at the time, that was kind of like more my speed reading fiction books. So for me at the time, I liked reading fiction books and I liked reading sport articles. So I could read. It was weird. If you gave me a nonfiction book, I couldn't finish it. But if you just gave me like a 10 page sports article about any topic, I could finish that because I just love sports so much. I could kill that. So what I did, I just went on Players Tribune and I just started reading sport, like the essays that athletes would write. I would just read them. I would just knock them out. And that was kind of my thing. And then after that, Michael Bennett wrote a book. It was called Things That Make White People Uncomfortable.
I had his brother on the podcast.
Yeah. We talked about that too, I think, earlier on this year. He wrote a book, Things That Make White People Uncomfortable. And I mean, that book kind of just resonated with me because for me, it was an athlete writing a book. So I'm like, and the title kind of just caught my eye. Cause I'm like, I don't know, maybe just being like maybe 19 at the time, I was like, things that might make white people uncomfortable. I was kind of curious, like, what's this guy talking about? I just want to see what he's talking about. So I read that book, and those two books, I might've read two more books, but those might've been the four books I read in college. And then I think when I left college, I was doing some interviews, and when you're in college, you know, like you're just in this like college grind, football. And sometimes you don't really get a chance to like, you know, hone in on the school part of things like you'd want to, just because I mean, the reality is that football grind is taking up a big chunk of your schedule. When I declared for the draft or whatever, I was doing some interviews and whatnot. And I was just noticing that my word choice, like my diction was just off. My brain wasn't giving me the words that I wanted sure. me to have. I was like, nah, this is kind of seeming almost not elementary, but it's not as advanced as I'd like it to be. You know, I try to stay as sharp as I can mentally, which is kind of always been one of the things that I felt like has been my edge and my playing career. So when the pandemic hit, there was nothing to do, obviously, so except sit at the house all day. And after a while, playing video games got boring and I was watching Netflix for a while, but then Netflix kind of loses its appeal when that's like the only option that you have. I mean, when it's kind of something that you do because it's like a relaxation thing, it's different. But when it's like wake up and watch Netflix from sun up to sundown, it starts to lose its appeal. So I was like, let me just find a book that fits me, something that I would like. So The Last Dance was on at the same time, and they were talking about Phil Jackson and the Bulls. So I was doing my research on that, and I figured out that Phil Jackson had wrote a book called 11 Rings.
Such a good book.
A great book. So I'm reading this book, and it's the best of both worlds for me because, like I said, I like reading about sports anyway.
Right.
So I'm like, wow, this book is amazing. I can really dive into this one. So I read this book. It's talking about Kobe, talking about his time with Michael Jordan, the Shaq feud, talking about his Zen-like approach to things. And at that point right there, that's when I was like, I don't know, something that's like the old fire was ignited again, but I was like, okay, I think I'm back into this reading stuff again. So I finished this book, and then Rich Paul, who runs my agency, Clutch, I was like, do you have any books that I could read?
He's LeBron James agent too, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, do you have any books that I could read and recommend? Because, I mean, at the time, I didn't know any, like, that was just the book that I've seen just because of Last Dance. But I'm looking for other books now that can kind of, you know, keep my interest going. And I kind of wanted to venture off from the athletic side of it and just kind of start reading different type of books now and kind of expand my knowledge on everything. So he was like, give this book, Chop Wood, Carry Water, a chance.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit hesitant because that was the first book that I've seen that wasn't that really like a athletic based book. Cause like I said, the Michael Bennett book, I read that one. And then this 11 Rings book, I read it. So now the Chop Wood, Carry Water was a little bit outside the comfort zone. But when I started reading it, it was an easier read than I thought. So I'm thinking that it being, I don't know, a book that's not really catered to the athlete per se, I was thinking that's going to be like a hard, you know, some of these books are a little bit harder to digest.
Sure.
But I'm reading it. It was a pretty simple read, pretty straightforward conceptually. And I learned a lot of like things that I felt like that I could, you know, apply to my life, you know, where he was talking about comparison is a thief of joy. You're always building your own house, be where your feet are. And it's things that I was like, okay, these are all things that I find pretty applicable to my day-to-day living. So I started reading these books, taking these notes. And when I read that book, I don't know, it kind of like puts you on a crave for like, all right, let me see if I can find a book that's not too far away from this book, but it's pretty identical to this one. Like where it was kind of fiction based still. So I wasn't completely in the nonfiction yet. So I read The Alchemist.
Oh, great book.
So, but I'm doing my research. So I'm on Google doing my research. Like, I'm like, let me make sure that I pick the right books because I don't want to have a bad experience and then, you know, put this fire out. So I read The Alchemist, and that was a great book in itself. You know, pursuing your dreams, following what your heart desires, talking about how fear is the biggest obstacle that can prevent, you know, for you from reaching your dreams. Always getting back up whenever you're knocked down, get back up. And I think after that book, that's when I was like, okay, I'm ready for like some of the more, you know, serious books. Cause I tried to find another book like The Alchemist, but I couldn't necessarily find one. So I got back on Google, started looking, doing my research on some books, and then Stillness is the Key popped up.
No way. Okay.
I was like,
I was going to ask you who recommended it to you, but you just found it random.
Yeah, it was just random, like random books like Chop Like Carry Water, Chop Wood Carry Water, books like The Alchemist. And I would just go through, read the reviews a little bit. So I read Stillness is the Key. That was probably my first, you know, nonfiction, like completely enlightenment book. And I read that one, and that book just, I mean, it was like, again, it wasn't as hard to read as I thought it was going to be. It was pretty simple, straightforward. I mean, I was posting it on Instagram when I had Instagram at the time. People were like, wow.
Did you get rid of your Instagram? I wanted to ask you that.
Yeah, I got off of Instagram probably in February just to kind of give myself, you know, more clarity, more peace of mind heading into the second season. So,
dude, I love this. I love this so much for a bunch of reasons. One, very similar to my journey. I loved reading as a kid, but I loved Westerns and detective novels. Yep. I loved stuff that was fun to read, but there wasn't anyone to be like, no, here's what good books are, right? Not that those other books aren't good, because I think anything you're reading is making you a better reader, and it's making you love reading, and it's entertaining. And it's certainly better than just about anything else you could do. But they weren't like, no, like here's the good shit.
Exactly.
Right? But then I went through a period where I didn't read much in high school, and then I really fell in love with reading towards the end of high school and then in college. But I love that one, you sort of, you were like, hey, like I want to be better at something. I want to be more articulate, or I want to be more able to express what I'm thinking or feeling. I want a mental edge. And so you started a journey, and then you asked for help on the journey from a smart, successful person like Rich Paul. I love that. And I love that you started from a zone of interest, which is sports, and then you expanded outwards. Because I think one of the reasons people don't read is one, reading is hard, and harder for some people than others. But two, they don't really understand that they just haven't read books that they could do anything with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to think about return on investment. If you're asking someone to spend a week of their time doing something and they don't get anything out of it, it doesn't help them with who they want to be or what they want to do. They're like, what's the point of this? You know? So I love that you just, you focused on sports and then you expanded from there. I'm so glad we randomly got connected too.
No, exactly. And I think something that I had to realize for me, like one of the obstacles, I mean, being a 22-year-old, I'm probably on my phone more than I should be.
Yeah.
So picking up like a book, like an actual, like the physical copy of a book and trying to read that was kind of difficult for me. I don't know why, but just picking up a physical copy was difficult for me.
It's a muscle you hadn't been working.
Exactly. So what I had to do was get these books on my iPad.
Huh.
So that's really the main way that I read. I got the meditations book. I got the physical copy of that one because you said that you recommend getting the physical copy and just to be able to
yeah.
You know, break it down how you like. But for me, I read on my iPad and it's easier for me to like track it. I could highlight certain parts that I like, come back to it. And I don't know, it's almost like it's more comfortable for my eyes. I can't really explain it, but it's almost like it's more comfortable for my eyes to like read the message that way. Like my eyes are kind of already used to looking at an electronic device anyway.
I think the other part of it is just like, we live in a culture that rewards, like, think about it. It's like, people were reading blogs and then they were like, that's too much writing. And they invented Twitter, and Twitter's like so short. Right. Yeah. And then people used to like watching television shows. And then they were like, but what if the television show was only 1 minute long? And that's what TikTok is, you know? So it's like, everything's getting shorter and shorter and shorter, which is creating shorter attention spans. But like, even though you and I do radically different things, right? Like you play a sport where very big people are trying to hurt you, and I write books. At the core of it, what both our professions require is intense periods of concentration. Like for you, it's concentration on the field, but also when the offense takes the field, and then when you're sitting on the sideline, right? You're having to watch as you're having to rest and recover, but also think and plan and process and then take feedback from the coach and so on and so forth. And I think like the more you're able to concentrate and not jones for your phone or, you know, get distracted or watch what's happening on the screen or, you know, space out, the better you're going to be. And so really cultivating that ability to concentrate is so important. Have you read Cal Newport's book, Deep Work?
I haven't got a chance to read it. I need to write that down. I'm always looking for book recommendations.
I'll give you a couple more. So I'd read Cal Newport's stuff, Deep Work. I also had him on the podcast a couple times, so it's worth listening to. But then I was also thinking about you for sports books. There's a book called The Way of Baseball that I really like. If you like Chop Wood, Carry Water, I think you'd like this book about sort of like a Zen approach to baseball.
Okay.
And then have you read Education of a Coach about Bill Belichick?
No, I haven't read that one either. So see that.
Okay. So one of the great biographers and journalists of all time, like he's this guy named David Halberstam. Like do you know in the Vietnam War, there's the famous photo of the monk lighting himself on fire.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So he was there when that happened. Like he was one of the great, reporters during Vietnam. But then later in his career, he wrote two books about Michael Jordan, and then he wrote one book about Bill Belichick. And this is like, I think it stops like maybe in like 2005 or six. So it stops after three Super Bowls. So it's incredible like how much Bill Belichick has continued to dominate. But like, it's one of the great, great sports books of all time. And I think you would really like it.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm always infatuated of always getting like insight on the mental of like some of like the great either athletes or thinkers or, you know, inventors. Yeah. I always like to see how they think and kind of not necessarily just get an insight. Like, I mean, these guys are some of the smartest minds I've ever lived. So just be able to, like, that's why the meditations but really resonated with me, just be able to see how Marcus Aurelius was able to think at the time. And you see how things that were going on back then still go on today. I just have like an infatuation with that, because it is crazy to me, because you might feel like in the moment, oh, this is horrible. I'm the only one that's to go through this. And then you look and it's like 2000 years ago, people were going through the same issues.
Got a quick message from one of our sponsors here, and then we'll get right back to the show. Stay tuned.
Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. It's always sensitive talking about these things, but Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/TDS. That's hims.com/TDS for your personalized ED treatment options. Hard mints are a chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with your healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens, because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with highly anticipated new releases and next to listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500.
Totally. Well, and you know what I find, and I think you may have already experienced it, but you'll definitely see more of it as you go through your career. You know, maybe you'll spend some time with the owner, or some tech company will bring you in because they're big fans, or you end up, you'll meet someone who's in the special forces, you'll meet someone who's in the NBA. You meet people who are like elite at whatever it is that they do. And like what I've found is like, they're all really, really similar. Like, it doesn't matter if they're throwing a ball, shooting a ball, kicking a ball, you know, shooting a gun, or like trading, you know, options or futures on the stock market. Like, the people who are world class at their thing are all operating on a similar wavelength and a similar approach. And I think that's why Marcus Aurelius as a philosopher is so much more interesting than like Aristotle or something. Like, Aristotle is a great thinker and there's good stuff in there, but you're not really getting the sense that like this guy was a doer who was like operating at a high level. And I think when I read about Marcus Aurelius, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy was like, he was doing a really hard job really well, just like you are, or just like Bill Belichick is. And you don't have to like the person or even like the job that they did to be like, oh man, I could learn something from this, you know, Navy SEAL sniper, because like they have to concentrate and focus and train and learn just like I do.
Yeah. And I think you see like with a lot of like these quote unquote great people, they don't only talk about the physical traits, so to say. You learn a lot about the mental traits. And I think that, I mean, it's not, well, not to say it's not hard, but you can pretty much, if you wanted to, get your physical body to like where you want it to be. But a lot of it is really dependent on that mental state. That's where you see like the Kobe, Michael Jordan comparisons. You see a lot of similarities with how they approach things mentally, the Bill Belichick's and Nick Saban's. A lot of it's the mental part of it. So there's a lot to be learned from the mental part of these great minds.
When it's also, we talked about sort of what does success look like, right? So I remember when I had Manu Ginobili on the podcast, and I've gotten to know him a bit. What's always sort of blown my mind about him is like, so you read about a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant or a Nick Saban, or you read about, I don't know, Napoleon, or like somebody who's like the best, most driven, dominant person in their field. And you're sort of like, man, like, it's probably not fun to be them. Like, does it suck to be that person? You know, like, you never get to have fun. You're consumed. All you think about is winning. There's no room for other stuff. And so you can kind of, when you read enough of those books, you get this sense that like, maybe that's what it takes, right? There's actually another good book you might like by Trevor Moad called It Takes What It Takes.
I read that one.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because he's Russell Wilson's
And that's what attracted me to it. When I seen Russell Wilson, I'm like, okay, yeah, let me get an insight on how this guy Russell Wilson's thinking.
But you know, you get this sense that like it might take like being a dysfunctional, unhappy person to be great, you know? And what I loved about Manu, and he sort of, and maybe this isn't totally true, but it's kind of what I make up in my mind, is the inspiration he serves for me is like, here's a guy who has four championships, but seems like a well-adjusted, you know, like balanced person who was both very driven, but it didn't like corrupt or break him. And that's like, for me, when I think about success, like if you told me, okay, Ryan, you could sell five times as many books and have five times the influence, but you would have to, I'm flashing forward to the future. You're divorced and you don't see your kids that much. Or like you have those things, but like you drink a lot, or, you know, you suck to be around. I don't think I would take that trade. So like, to me, when I think about what I want my success to look like and where I've looked for models is like people who are really great at what they do, but then also seem to be, you know, like good humans.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. Like, obviously, I mean, you want to be remembered as being a good human. I mean, you could be the best athlete, the best whatever it is, that whatever your thing is that you do. But I mean, at the end of the day, if people say bad things about you as the way you treated them, I don't think that's a trade off that that I would want, honestly, for myself. So I always try to find that balance. You know, I think I read a quote. This might have been the Daily Stoic. It might have even been on one of your YouTube videos when Anne Frank had said, "Nobody ever became poor by giving."
Yes,
that's the one that really stuck out to me. That, I mean, because it just, I don't know. For me, it just connected to me deeper, because that is almost the truth. Because by giving out, I mean, you're gaining something by that. Whether it might not be a financial gain, but you are gaining something from that internally, at the very least.
Yeah, I was reading. It's funny to hear that you loved, or very sweet to hear how much you loved the Players Tribune in college, because I read your article about your mom. And when I was reading that, I was thinking, like, that's almost more an impressive accomplishment than a Super Bowl ring. Like, to have someone write that letter about you, right, is like the sign of, like, I imagine when your mom had a kid, like, dreaming that her son would someday write that letter about her to her, she would be like, I did a good job, right? Like, that would have been success to her. Do you know what I mean?
No, you're right on that.
And in a way, that's a much harder achievement. Like, there's been a lot of great people, wealthy people, successful people, dominant athletes, whatever it is, who have not managed to achieve what your mom achieved with you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because reality is you have to have a, you know, an enormous impact on someone's life to the point where they feel compelled enough to write a heartfelt letter, you know, to you, like, regardless of, like, if it's your mother, if it's your football coach, if it's your boss, if it's your friend, like, they have to have an enormous impact in their life to where you feel compelled to, like, I want to pour out my heart to you and write a heartfelt letter telling you exactly how I feel about you, even if you can't read it or not.
Yeah. 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 It's and how many of those people who have, you know, hoisted the Lombardi trophy or whatever, actually their kids would have written the exact opposite letter about them. Do you know what I mean? Like, their kids are in therapy right now because they weren't around because they were, you know, focused on this, that, or the other.
No, that's a great point. That's actually a great point.
Did I send you the Chris Bosch book that I worked on, Letters to a Young Athlete? I forgot.
I'm looking at it right now, and it's on my desk. I have one more chapter to read.
Amazing. I mean, I was kind of as we were working on it, I was, because you and I had connected then, I was kind of thinking about you as I was working on it. Like, what would you say to this person who's in a different sport, you know, but like, and because I've got to imagine, that's something I was going to ask you. What is it like to be a first-round draft pick? I've got to imagine it is both incredibly exciting and rewarding and then terrifying and incredibly stressful.
No, definitely. I think with the good also comes the bad. You know, obviously, you reached almost, like you said, the pinnacle of your sport, being the dream, being a first-round pick. You see your dreams come to life. But the reality is, after that day, after you get drafted, now it's time to, you know, contribute to help turning a franchise around, you know, especially like when you're drafted, the higher you're drafted, I think the more pressure you have to do that. So it's something that I don't think you realize the magnitude of that at the time, but that's something that you get to find out really, really quickly, and something that you have to be able to embrace, because it is a lot of pressure. Because when you get in there, you have expectations. I mean, people are always going to compare you to guys that were drafted in that same slot, guys that team may have drafted in previous years, guys that you may be coming into. It's just so many comparisons and it's so many expectations. So you have to be able to embrace that. And at the same time, you can't let it overwhelm you.
When it must be frustrating because, like, you have your own expectations. And, you know, when you are meeting them or aren't meeting them, that, you know, that's like both stressful, rewarding, whatever. Like, it's hard enough to just, like, here's what I'm trying to do. Am I playing as well as I could play? That's one level. But then it's not like you asked for any of these expectations. And I've got to imagine a good percentage of the time to people who are criticizing or sort of, you know, laying this standard or that, it's not your coach or your agent or something. It's like some blogger who has no idea what the hell they're talking about to begin with. Not only have they never played football, they're not even that knowledgeable about the game.
Yeah, I think at this point, you know, it's a lot of things, whatever can generate the clicks at this point, really. But the reality is, I think that what people don't really understand about, like, athletes, writers, whatever, people that put their work out there to be criticized, is that the expectations that I have for myself are probably higher than the expectations you have for me. You know, like, I don't think you ever put out a book and, like, I hope this is a subpar book. Like, I'm putting this out here and I'm hoping that it's a subpar book. Like, you're putting it out there, like, I hope this is a great piece of work that people can gain knowledge from, that can impact lives. That's the expectation, I would assume. So when people are criticizing you, it's like, your expectation was already high enough, you know? So it's almost like they're reminding you of something that you already knew.
Yes. Well, when I talked at Alabama, we talked about this idea of, like, the inner scorecard versus the outer scorecard. Like, what are you measuring yourself on? Is it like what the stat sheet says? Is it the score? Is it what the critics are saying? Because they could be, you know, celebrating you, and actually you could, you know, be not even close to fulfilling your potential. Or conversely, they could be savaging you and it's like not your fault, or you're actually, you know, making the most of a situation that's a lot more complex than they understand. So like what Saban ended up pointing out in an article after, he was talking about how like sometimes like Alabama will be up by a bunch of points and he'll be like scowling on the sideline and people are like, he's miserable, he's never happy. And he's like, no, I just know we could be doing better. And so I'm focusing on that. And then conversely, when they win, he's not like over the moon. He's just like, or, sorry, when they lose, actually what I heard is that he's better to be around when they lose than when they win. Because when they win, and maybe Meyer was like this too, when they win, he's like, here's all the things we could have done better. When they lose, he's like, it was my fault, not the player's fault. Here's what I could have done better. So like, I think, yeah, people on the outside don't really understand that one, you don't care what they think. Two, they don't know what they're talking about. And three, they're already focusing on all the things that actually matter and trying to get better, because that's what drives someone to be great at what they do.
Yeah, it was actually interesting. Like, so in high school, I was on a pretty average team. Like, we would go to the playoffs. We probably last the first two rounds. The first probably was the second round. So I really never was accustomed to, like, being at a school that was just used to winning. So when I went to Ohio State, it completely blew my mind, because at Ohio State, not only is the expectation to win, it's to win by a certain amount of points. It took me a while to understand it. Like, we play a team, maybe they ranked number 25 in the country, win by two touchdowns. And all the stuff coming out was like negative. Like, what's going on with Ohio State? Like, they don't look as good as they used to look. So it's like, they want every game to be a 30-point blowout. So the expectations are just through the roof. And like I said, something that you just have to embrace. I mean, it's not for the, like, the faint of heart.
So coming off your rookie season, which was probably, more exciting and amazing than you could have expected, and then also disappointing and frustrating in ways that you couldn't have anticipated, how do you go into this new season? Like, I read that you sort of feel like you've got a new perspective on the game and what you're trying to do. Walk me through what that means.
I think this offseason, just putting in a lot of work on the mental aspect of it. I mean, like I said, I've done less physical work, and I've seen the physical gains, which is great and all. But I think the thing about the professional level is physically, everyone's probably like it's not that big of a gap, you know, physically.
Sure.
Because with the combine and the way they do things, they pretty much like kind of kick out the guys who aren't as athletic, pretty much. Because if you're running a 4.7, you're probably not going to get drafted, which is unfortunate, because there are some pretty nice players who just happen to run a 4.7. So athletically, they pretty much, you know, compress it to the most athletic guys in the whole world. So it's really all about the mental part of it. So just like knowing who you are as a person, you know, being able to, like I said, adapt to whatever situations may come. And for me, just getting into the whole Stoic philosophy, reading, learning about some of these guys, just when I went back out there for OTAs, everything just felt so much more calm. Like, it wasn't like a big craze, and that may come with the experience. I know my rookie year, one of our coaches told me, you know, every experience is a benefit, whether it's a good or bad experience, you know, it's something that you could take from it. So experience in NFL is a great thing to have. So I think that having that experience, having the mental, like, just putting in the mental work, 'cause I think obviously like learning the philosophy is obviously, you have to sit here and read and learn all these new things, which has been fun for me. But I just been able to see my mental, you know, kind of strengthen so much over the course of the last nine months. And I'm excited, honestly, for what's to come.
I love that your coach said that, because that was something Robert Green, who is my mentor, is my mentor, but certainly was when I was coming up. He said, you know, it's all material. And I was like, what does that mean? He's just like, you can use all of it, right? It doesn't matter. He's like, that's the great part about being a writer is that everything that happens, you can use in material, like directly or indirectly. It's all shaping your worldview. And yeah, everything that happens in the game is teaching you something. Even the injuries are teaching you something, right? Like, oh, don't, you got to be careful about this. You know, you got to be worried about that. You know, here's how to take better care of yourself. That's such great advice to get early on. And when they talk about veterans, like the main thing that separates a veteran from a rookie or an inexperienced person is, you know, just the hours that they've spent doing the thing.
No, exactly. Just watch, because I remember my rookie year, just when I was just watching film, I'm looking at these veterans and it's like, it seems almost like they're just relaxing on the field.
Yeah.
And I'm over here running around like a chicken with my head cut off, just running around. And then you tend to learn, okay, the reason why he's relaxing is because he knows that with this formation and the way the receivers are lined up, well, he's not expecting this to happen or this to happen. He knows that this is going to happen. So he doesn't have to be running around like a chicken with his head cut off. He can play way more calm. And like I said, that comes with experience.
Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble, so you don't have to comment on it with your new quarterback. But when I watched that Rams New England Super Bowl, that's what I noticed is that Tom Brady felt like he deserved to be there, and it was just a game to just another game to him, and Jared Goff was probably thinking, "Holy shit, I'm in the Super Bowl! Like, I don't want to lose to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl." And yeah, like the idea of chop wood carry water is getting to a place, I think, where you are able to calm down just a little bit, just enough that your training and your talent and your body can do what it's great at doing.
No, I think you hit that right on the head. And another thing, when I was watching, I think in December, I went on a binge on December on your YouTube channel. Oh. And I was just watching all these videos because I don't know. I mean, you obviously, I had surgery probably first week of December. So I just had a bunch of free time on my hand. So I'm watching all my YouTube videos. And I came across one, Amor Fati, just loving your fate. And it just clicked something inside of me. Like, instead of like looking at this like a negative thing, like embrace it. I love it. I love that I got surgery because now it gives me a chance to improve things that I probably wouldn't have improved if I didn't have to get surgery. I love that some of these plays happen because now I'm learning from these plays and there's a less probability that they'll happen again. So I was able to kind of see it from that perspective. It kind of like was a perspective change for me.
Well, and it feels passive, right? To be like, oh, I'm glad I'm getting surgery or I'm glad, you know, like, I guess it's good that I got, you know, I blew the coverage here and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, that they rolled me over. It's actually not passive though, because it's active, because you're having to choose to learn from it, right? It could happen and it not make you better, right? It could just have happened and just suck. It could just happen and have lead to, you know, points being scored. It could just happen and now you're, you know, in the hospital getting surgery and blah, 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 blah. You have to choose to respond to it and to integrate it and to grow from it and be improved by it. That's the active part, is the we all make mistakes, right? Failure is only educational if you choose to acknowledge or learn the lesson. A lot of people make mistakes all the time. And then what do? They make the same mistake again, right? So it's not the failure so much that's meaningful, but how you choose to use it.
And for me, it just kind of keeps that fire burning. You know, instead of getting down on yourself when you love, like when you kind of have that mindset of loving what's happening, it's like, oh, I wish that would happen again because now I have a chance to respond to it in a different way. As opposed to saying, oh, well, I hope that doesn't happen again because I don't want to be embarrassed. Well, now it's like, I embrace that. Like, let it happen again. Like that's just an opportunity for me to show my growth.
Right. Have you read Mastery by Robert Greene? I think you would like it. Did we talk about this one already?
I don't think we did. You might need to send me just a list of books to just read.
I will send you a list, but I think you'd like Mastery too. I love that you're watching the YouTube channel. Like the reason I do them is that I understand, like if I want to learn about something, I don't really watch YouTube videos. Like I read books about it. That's how I learn. But I totally understand that different people are in different places, have different things going on, you know? And so I'm always thinking about like, what is another medium that I can bring the ideas to people? And we've been doing like TikToks and stuff too. It's been going great. I don't even have TikTok. Like, I don't even know how it works.
Me either.
I heard like you should, like I'm such an old man. I'm like, aren't the Chinese going to be tracking me on my phone if I have this? Like, I don't even have it, but like, I like that it's reaching people, you know? So I'm always thinking about like how to do.
No, honestly, I thought TikTok was just like a platform where people just make dances. I didn't even know that it was some resourceful information on there. I thought that you just record skits and whatnot on there, but apparently you can get on there and learn something if your algorithm is set up properly.
Yeah, no, and that is the other thing we were talking about, why we have such short attention spans. It's like, if you do one thing on the internet's like, oh, I'm just going to give him a million more examples of this. So you don't like, remember you were talking about going to a library. It's like you go to a library as a kid, you're just like bumping into all this random stuff and it's all totally unrelated. Like, you know, now it's like, you know, like you click one pair of shoes on the internet. It's like, let me show you a million pictures of the exact kind, you know, like, it's like, oh, you're a sneakerhead. Here's a billion pairs of sneakers. That's not like, oh, let me tell you about watches. Right. It's like just the same thing over and over.
And I've noticed that again. because I've gone off of Instagram and my Twitter usage is down. I kind of got into YouTube a little bit. So when I watch like one YouTube video, I might watch like a Joe Rogan episode about whether it's like an interview with like Jordan Peterson or something. Next thing I know, my whole YouTube is flooded with Jordan Peterson's content. Like that's all I see is Jordan Peterson content. And then I might watch like a video about something else. And now my YouTube is flooded with all this now.
And I think that's how these people get like radicalized. You know,
for sure.
They click this one thing and then all of a sudden they're like, masks don't work and the vaccine's a fit, you know, the vaccine will make you magnetized. And also like JFK is still alive, you know, like all of a sudden you like, you just get like sucked into this rabbit.
Yeah. Well, it's like, if you come on YouTube with the belief of, let's say everyone should be vaccinated, then that's all they're going to like. It's going to just, you're going to see videos that support that claim. And if you come on YouTube with the belief that nobody should be vaccinated, then you're going to just get videos that support that claim as well.
Yeah. There's actually a great book. You probably don't need to read it. The concept is good, but it's called The Filter Bubble. And basically what happens is the algorithms or the filter, like the filter that's deciding what to show you, it creates a bubble around you. And the worst part about it is you don't even know you're in the bubble. Right, no. You're just like, you just think that everyone else is in the same bubble as you, but they're not, they're in their own bubble.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't know where I read this, but it was just, I just knew that it was true. Like pretty much you can go on the internet and find something that backs up any claim that you may have. Like if your claim is that, let's say for instance, the earth is flat, you can go on the internet and type in the earth is flat. It'll probably find a couple of articles that say the earth is flat and like have information by this guy that that's the reason why the earth is flat. And on the other hand, you can find information that proves the otherwise. So whatever you believe to be true, it's ways to prove that in your head to give you the illusion that that is true. Like, and people believe that that is true as well.
Well, funny enough, we did a TikTok video about this, but there's a great quote from Zeno, the founder of Stoicism. He says, you know, conceit is the enemy of knowledge, because what happens is like, it's actually not stupid people that fall for this stuff on the internet. It's moderately intelligent people who think they're very smart. Yeah. Right. So like, Kyrie Irving, where does he, you know, come off thinking that the world is flat? It's because he's overestimated his mental ability. So he's not coming to stuff from a place of humility. He's coming at it from a place of like, probably like, I'm great at this. Obviously, I'm a you know, brilliant too. And so you can end up getting like sucked into like things that like when you look at most of these conspiracy theories. On the one hand, they're preposterous, but also they put the person who's believing them in the position of feeling like they're smarter than every other person. It's like, oh, you're all idiots. I figured this out, right? Like, they know most people don't agree with them. That's what's attractive to the idea of the earth being flat, is it's like, oh, I discovered this and I'm smarter than everyone by understanding it. And so really, like, when we talk about ego being the enemy, ego is the enemy because it makes you fall for things, because it's actually using your ego against you.
That's true. That's true. And like you said, that's kind of who they're preying on. Is the totally. That's who they're preying on. And
a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing is another great expression.
No, but going back to December when I was on a YouTube channel, I think just I saw another video, which really propelled my off season, kicked me off the right way, because, you know, in the Epictetus quote, when he was saying you must undergo a hard winter of training and not rush into things in which we have not prepared. Just reading that quote and then coincidentally it being December in Detroit. So it was really a winter. Like, I didn't get a Miami winter. I got a Detroit winter where it was cold. So it was like, I was able to kind of get the whole imagery and then also have to kind of live the reality of that too. And just having that quote, I mean, I was rehabbing in Detroit. So I was in Detroit doing my rehab from December all the way up until April. And that quote kind of just always stuck in my mind, you know, because obviously some days are going to be better than other days. But I always came back to that quote, which is that, I mean, you have to undergo the hard winter of training, you know, and not rush into things, like enjoy the process of that, because that process is going to get you ready for, you know, the season or whatever your thing might be. And I actually said that, I said that quote to our Ohio State strength coach, and he loved it. He showed it to the whole football team.
Oh, amazing.
He loved that quote. I mean, he put it on the board. I mean, cause it just, I don't know. It just so applicable for the athlete in the winter, because, I mean, obviously you don't want to do some of that stuff. It's tough. Winter is always tough in sports. Like, that's when the workouts are the most extreme, because you're the furthest away from the season. So you can pour more of a physical load on the body.
Right.
So just having that quote on hand is something that just helped me come to terms that, oh, it's going to be a tough winter. Get ready for it. But like, also, like I said, embrace it.
Well, I love, you know, some players, obviously they think about like, what's the weather going to be for tomorrow's game? But like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, they never think about that, because they know, like, they have played in the worst conditions that could possibly exist, right? Like, so when we talk about the obstacle is the way or Amor Fati, like, when you have to play in the winter in Detroit, although you guys have a closed stadium, but like, you know, if you're playing in Foxborough or Green Bay, like, you know, you can put up with anything. Yeah. Like, Tom Brady probably shows up in Tampa and he's like, dude, I don't care about any of this. Like, I played in Boston in the winter, right? So like, when you go through that hard winter training, when you get your ass kicked, when you have to recover from surgery, like you are, the one benefit is like, you know, you're tough, right? Cause like you got through it.
Nah, exactly. And I think that's kind of like, I think it's something that we, at Ohio State, something that we always refer to is like kind of putting those days in the bank.
Yes.
And then when it's time, like say, like you get that 5-degree game, now it's time to withdraw. It's time to withdraw it out of the bank, and you've already prepared for it. So it's not a shock to you because you already experienced it.
Yes. Yes. You paid your dues. I think about that too, again, to go back to Tom Brady, like how many Super Bowls has that dude lost, right? Like he now can go into anything and be like, I'm going to be fine either way. So I can be present for this, you know? Every experience you get is a deposit that you can make a withdrawal on later or borrow against, right? To further the metaphor. I love that. That's smart.
Nah, yeah. And just on a third point, I mean, I'm definitely fanboying your YouTube channel right now, but shout out the Daily Stoic.
Please.
But that video, You Control How You Play, that's something that I was probably watching for every single OTA practice this year.
Wow. Okay.
You know, just because that, in the end of the day, that's really the reality of the things. You can't control anything else that happens. Like, you can't control the weather. You can't control whether you get hurt, whether the coverage gets busted. You just control how you control how you play. That's the only thing you have control of. Same way they say, like, okay, you can't fix the whole, I'm gonna give the world peace. You can just find peace within yourself and hope that passes on to somebody else. You know, like, but it starts with you. You control yourself first.
It's funny because I gave that talk when I spoke to the Browns, I think like 2 years ago. And so I went through it, and this sounds like a name drop, but we didn't meet or anything. So I'm not like pretending that we're friends, but, so obviously Baker Mayfield sitting there, and then there was a lot of expectations about what the Browns would do that year. They did not end up doing well. And I remember at the end of the season, or at maybe it was the beginning of this season, you know, he was like, someone's like, you know, what are you going to do differently this year? What did you learn? He was like, you know, last year I just spent way too much time focused on things that I don't control. You know, I spent too much time on social media. You know, I was like, come on, man. Like, we talked about this at the beginning of last season, but I think, you know, that's another thing is like, there's this great expression, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Oftentimes we have the information. That's not the problem. It's that it just doesn't hit us emotionally until we're at a place where we can actually use it. And there's so much advice I've gotten in my life that I was like, uh-huh, yeah, I totally get it. I already knew that. And then like 5 years later, I'm like, why did I not listen to that for the last 5 years?
No, exactly. I was talking to my cousin the other day. He's in eighth grade, and he was just talking about, you know, man, like my dad wakes me up, he's a boxer. My dad wakes me up.
Yeah.
We run all these miles. He gives me a certain amount of food to eat every day to make sure I stay on weight. Like, I'm miserable doing this. Like, it's tough. And I was like, you're going to appreciate that because that's what it takes to be successful. Like, that sacrifice and that grind. But when I'm telling him, I'm looking at him in his eyes, and I could tell that he wasn't really receiving the message. like how I understood it at the time. And I just like take a step back and go, okay, this kid is in eighth grade. He's probably not hearing what I'm saying right now. But 4 years, five years pass, he might look at that and be like, okay, I understand what my cousin was talking about. So you do have to be ready to receive the message. You know, the message can be pure and whatnot. It could be really beneficial, but if you're not ready to receive it, you probably won't apply it.
Have you watched the Jocko Willink good video?
I haven't seen that. I've seen some Jocko videos. I haven't seen that video in particular.
That was one of the ones that inspired the You Control How You Play video, but you might like that one. He basically like, it's like, shitty thing happened. He's like, good.
Oh, no, I've seen that one. He has like the kind of the dark music in the background kind of in a way. Yeah. And he's talking in like this voice. I saw that one.
He's amazing too. Well, so one other book recommendation, I'll put this on a list for you, but The Inner Game of Tennis is actually, I think it's Tom Brady's favorite book. But it's an incredible book about the mental game of sports, mostly through tennis. But it, basically the premise is like, you can't hit and think at the same time. So how do you get to a place where the thinking is subconscious, right? So you basically, and you've probably heard this a million times, like, how do you get out of your own head? It's a book just about that. It's a great book. I think you'd really like
it. Have you read the book, A Man's Search for Meaning?
Of course.
That was a great one right there. I mean, I think I read that at the right time because here I was thinking like, okay, am I in a shitty predicament right now? But then I read this book and I see, okay, this is a real shitty predicament. And this guy, Victor, is able to, you know, find happiness in little things, whether that's getting a scrap of meat, that's the highlight of his day, whether that's, okay, I was able to make one of these other camp prisoners smile. That's the highlight of his day. Like, you see how the little, like, it's, you could find joy in these unfortunate situations. And it just makes, like I said, things that you feel like are big problems just seem so minuscule or trivial in the grand scheme of things.
No, man, that's totally right. And so he has another book that – came out somewhat recently. I mean, he's long since deceased, but they sort of compiled some of his lectures. He has a book called Yes to Life, called, in the subtitle, I love it, it's In Spite of Everything. So you'd like that one. But then there's another book actually by a woman who was also in Auschwitz, named Dr. Edith Egger, who wrote a book called The Choice. And it's a great book. And I actually had her on the podcast. She's 93 years old. She's still alive. So you might like that episode as well. But her book, The Choice, is also really good. I agree. It's like you want to study people who have been through stuff that makes what you've been through look like a fairy tale, because it puts your problems in perspective.
Well, yeah, it puts them in a great perspective. And so when those problems, like when they, I mean, because obviously life's not perfect. Problems are going to come up again. It just makes you like, okay, now I see that I'm not the only one that's gone through this. People have gone through worse. So I just needed to buckle up and stay the course, and I'll be just fine.
No, totally. But I think buckle up is a great phrase too. I think about that too. When I think of Amor Fati, I think like, buckle up, you'll get through this. It's not going to be fun, but on the other side, something good will come out of it.
No, I agree with that, man. It's definitely a lot of insight. I mean, you don't even have to be a stoic, so to say, to just look at some of these lessons and be able to learn from them. I think you just have the open mind is to try to receive that information.
Man, I'm so glad we got connected. I'm glad you had Instagram long enough to post that one photo. And then Adam Lefko from TNT, he sent it to me. And then I'm glad we connected. And now we'll have to stay in touch. And let's link up while we're both in Texas.
No doubt. That sounds like a plan to me, brother.
Dude, I love it. Thanks for rescheduling with me. And seriously, you got my number. You can call me anytime. If you ever want advice about anything or you want some book recommendations, I am at your disposal.
Thank you. It's been an honor, brother.
Hey, it's Ryan. If you want to take your study of Stoicism to the next level, I want to invite you to join us over at Daily Stoic Life. We have daily conversations about the podcast episodes, about the daily email. We actually do a special weekend set of emails for everyone. You get all our Daily Stoic courses and challenges totally for free. That's hundreds of dollars of value every single year, including our New Year New You Challenge, which we're going to launch in January. You get a special cloth-bound edition of the best of meditations that we've done. You get a bunch of cool stuff. It's an awesome community. I've loved being a part of it. I've loved getting to meet everyone who's trying to take their study of Stoicism to the next level. Love to have you join us. Check us out at dailystoiclife.com. We'd love to have you and join us on this digital Stoa that we've staked out together and get better every day. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Okay, so if you had a time machine, how far in time would you need to go back to be a dominant basketball player of that era?
I need to go to when Bob Cousy was playing.
Back in the plumber
27
days?
27-year-old Shea would give Bob Cousy the f***ing business. He's not guarding me.
Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea and I are combing through all of the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling ones, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Six Trophies ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to the best one yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to the best one yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.